Hello, beautiful souls.
We bring you conscious content filled with empowering information.
Designed to align you with the fulfilling freedom of activated awareness.
I am Rachel Alcyon.
And I am Daniel Alcyon.
Welcome to the Ecstatic Existence Podcast.
Shut up, Merritt.
Did y'all just start with that?
Hello and welcome back to the Ecstatic Existence Podcast. I am Rachel.
And I'm Daniel.
And I'm Merritt.
And I'm Liberty.
And we're driving around for 2 weeks in a van.
And I think the madness has started to set in.
Yeah, we're on day... what day?
I don't even know.
Well, let's see. The first day. Let's start at the beginning then.
Yeah, well, let's go through our journey. When we left you off, last on this...
amazing podcast, we left Iceland where we'd been for a few days. So go back and listen to that episode if you have not already, then you'll get caught up to our adventures. So
when we left Iceland, we flew to England.
Yep, and right away we went and picked up our van. It's awesome, and we're going to do a visual tour, so be sure to check that out on Facebook. You'll get the, you know, the ins and outs of what we've been living in for a few weeks.
More than a van, it's an RV. An actual RV, mobile home, if you will.
Yeah, so the kids have bunks in the back, and Daniel and I have, like, a king size up front in a loft, and, you know, there's...
a little couch.
Yeah.
Dining area.
A little diner area.
Bathroom, little kitchen.
And it's great.
And I gotta say, it was kind of a big challenge for me, because I am driving a big vehicle.
It's gigantic.
And driving the British way, driving in the UK on the left, with the driver's seat on the right. And so both of those things combined was pretty, like, pretty big learning curve. The first,
probably hour or so,
the first
was
almost
pretty
day,
hectic.
I was, like, white-knuckling it and, like, could not peel a hand off the steering wheel. And
right, and it really takes all eyes, which we're used to, right, because we live on our boat. So when we take the boat out, it's like, oh, all hands on deck, everybody on deck, right? So it's, that's, like, how it is when we're, like, backing up or pulling out. It's like, everybody look. So that's super fun and a pretty easy crossover and yet has its own challenges. So, yeah, we got the RV. Immediately, we drove from the RV place through Cambridge over to... my family friend's house. So I lived in England when I was a little girl. I left here when I was about 7 years old, maybe eight. And my neighbors are Meyer and Steve. And Meyer is a lovely woman from Wales. And Steve is a hilarious Englishman.
He's so funny.
So funny. So much energy. And they were just really excited to have us come over. I haven't seen them since I was probably maybe, I don't know, a teenager. They came over to visit us in the States once.
And they'd been, like, your family's friend for years.
Yeah, for the whole time.
For 30 years.
30 years. But I haven't had much contact with them over the years. My parents have stayed in touch. And so it was really a last-minute thing that I said, hey, we're going to be there. Can you meet up for, like, tea? I just thought we were going to go have tea with them.
And you know what? It was so above and beyond just having tea. They put us up at their beautiful home for two nights.
Mm-hmm.
And... it was amazing. They fed us.
Yeah, they did our laundry. Meyer did, like, three loads of our laundry, our family's laundry.
Yeah.
We
had all, like, the wonderful places to shower and, you know, all the
used all their
food.
Stuff. Yep, they provided food. I mean, they really, it was really a full circle experience for me, you know, recognizing that they have been really guardian angels of my life for a very long time. And they, you know, Steve drove me by my childhood home, which also stirred up a whole lot of, you know, healing and triggering. And it was just really beautiful. You know, we paint things in a certain way in our childhood, you know, either, oh, everything was wonderful or, oh, everything was terrible. And I kind of had leaned towards that everything was terrible kind of thing. And so, it's like 6 years of my therapy was spent on healing some of the trauma that happened during that time. And so to know that they had been really looking out for me and loving me and just arms open till now has been really a wonderful feeling.
They showed Rachel a whole pile of photos.
A stack of photos. They gifted it to me. I was weeping when Meyer said, would you like these? So we were hugging and crying. And
it was like little Rachel and her siblings and her parents. And
from that time when I lived there in England. And it was really cool to show the kids that, you know, share with Liberty and Merritt, like me as a little girl and my home and what I was like. And We drove past the old church that I took ballet lessons in and was a Girl Scout at.
Yeah.
I got to go past the place where they sell fish and chips, like real English fish and chips in the paper, like the greasy newspaper.
That you remember getting when you were young?
Oh, yeah. And it was still there. It had been renovated, but it was still there. And it was just really an amazing trip down memory lane. I hadn't been back there since I was 7. And I started crying as we drove to the site of my old home because I remembered. I was like, I feel even emotional now. I was like, oh, you take a left here, and then that's where I caught the bus. And then you turn down this street, and there's my house. And it all looked so much smaller than I remember. It was huge. It was huge, but in that, yeah, my adult perspective, it was much smaller. So that was really fun. And then, yeah, it was just so wonderful. Really healing, really full circle, beautiful.
Yeah. Another really cool thing that happened is Steve is quite the cyclist. And so he got everybody equipped with a bicycle and a helmet. And we all went on an epic bike journey. He took us on a tour, a bike tour.
Yeah, we just thought it was going to be like a leisurely afternoon tour. And it turned into 11 miles through the English countryside, where the kids are like dodging nettles and trying to not fall in the river. And at some points, there was really busy traffic.
Yep.
And we had to ride on the narrow shoulder or up on the sidewalk.
And he's so funny. Also, he's narrow. Like, come along, all in a line now. Come on, come on. No time for holiday. Let's go. Back on the bikes.
And he was so good with the kids, really attentive, making sure that their needs were met, and also really riding that line of, like, pushing their edge and helping them expand and grow into a new experience that they'd never, had before.
Oh, it was awesome. And then at one point on the trip, we stopped at a little pub and, you know, got, like, some chips or crisps, as they call them
crisps,
in the UK.
Yeah.
Crisps. And a couple beverages. And there were some little boats on the river.
Yeah, river boats.
River boats. These little narrow and long, skinny, low, very interesting boats. For us, we live on our big motor yacht, and it's so very different than these boats I saw. So I was fascinated with them. Saw a couple walking up and started talking with them. And we got a little tour of the boat, which was pretty cool. And, you know, there was that camaraderie among fellow boaters.
Oh, yeah, totally.
From different parts of the world. And we got to talk about all the boat stuff. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, that was a great day. We had dinner with them. And just, it was such a great touch point, you know, a welcome, a reception to England to be able to have all that hospitality.
Yeah, just stayed up super late talking and laughing and playing games and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was so good. And then the next morning, we woke up and headed out to meet in person Taran Reed, who is our astrologer on this podcast. So you can always go back and check out every month. Taran gives us an astrological reading breakdown, talking about the different influences that we can expect, the energies moving through. And we've been working with him for about 2 years on this show, collaborating via Skype. And he's also given us several readings personally. So really a good friendship has developed, but we live in different parts of the world. We're in the Seattle area. He's been in the London area, and we've never crossed paths until just the other day. So we got to meet in person. We met in Reading. In a beautiful park, Forbury Gardens.
A Victorian park.
And that was actually established by King Henry I?
The first. And then King Henry VIII.
Like, ruined it all.
Ruined it all.
Ruined everything.
Yeah. There's a lovely abbey, and so the whole gardens were taken care of by the nuns, and then he got rid of all that and turned it into, like, a bomb storage or something.
Yeah, armory.
Yeah. But yeah, so anyway, Taran was standing there with his back turned, and we kind of snuck up on him and gave him a big hug, and it's just, like, so cool to see somebody in the flesh and, like, feel them and their energy, and, you know, we've been talking on Skype, like Daniel said,
and
yeah,
you know,
it was like we're old friends.
We recorded right there in the park, live, and so it's a little you know,
yeah, gritty and raw,
extra noisy, unedited, uncut. Like, it's pretty cool. So hopefully you enjoyed that. That's a different experience than you're used to, because I actually spend a lot of time editing up these shows and making them sound really tight for you, for your listening experience, listening enjoyment. But yeah, that one was just straight off the cuff. And it was cool because we got to see him in his body language as he's talking and speaking and moving. And that's a really special thing.
Yeah, he's fun.
Tauron, it was really cool seeing his hand gestures and, you know, doing all that, seeing him speak alive, because I've heard him talk so much, and then to actually see how he moves when he talks was really cool for me. And then...
we parted ways.
It was a really great experience because I got to provide Tauron with a life activation, one of the healing modalities that I'm really proud to offer. And so while that was going on in our RV, which was very interesting spatially and logistics-wise...
The girls and I went on a long walk. We decided that we needed some provisions for our journey, and
You had your eye on a health food store for a while.
Yeah, I need me a health food store. There's still a couple items that I need from a health food store, but a few things I had on my list were mason jars, because I'm obsessed with fermenting right now, and it's like massively changing my health and the way that I feel in my body. And so it's something that anyone can do and is really easy skill to cultivate. All you need are some mason jars, some vegetables, a little bit of salt, and then some fresh purified water. So, so we were on the hunt for some mason jars as well as a lot of health food items. And so we had to walk quite a ways, and with our GPS, we couldn't quite figure it out. So we kind of walked around in circles for a little bit, and Liberty was like, ah,
I was so annoyed.
We just wanted to find the place. We knew we were close, but it turns out it was upstairs in this mall. So we got a lot of things. It was really fun. Merritt was a huge help in carrying these big, heavy mason jars. And we got back perfect timing.
Yeah, right, yeah, right when Tauron and I were done.
And I've been able to ferment. So
yes.
Yay.
That's been lovely. And it's only going to get better from here on out.
Yep, we got sauerkraut on the way.
And so then after all of this, we left Reading and headed to... Dun, dun, dun. Stonehenge. So it's been a complete and total dream of mine my whole life to go to Stonehenge. I always thought, ever since I was a little kid, that that would be a really cool thing to do. Just a cool place to be and to visit and to say that you'd been there. Kind of a epic. I mean, almost like the pyramids. I still want to go to the pyramids.
Yeah,
like, I wanted to go to Stonehenge, you know?
Yes.
And finally got to do it. We got to go to Stonehenge. So we made it there, and the approach is through the big visitor center and museum, which we went to.
It's lovely.
Yep. Paid our admission fee and all that. Learned a bunch, saw some artifacts, and read a lot of different things about Stonehenge and its history and the different phases at which it went through, that it wasn't just one construction, it was several, and it kind of got renovated and updated and all this. So that was great. And we went out to tour the stones.
And they're incredible. And we got some amazing photos. Super fun.
And there's a lot of people out there.
Yeah, there are a lot of people. And, you know, they have it all roped off. And
so you can't actually get up into the actual circle or touch the stones.
However, a few days prior, they had a huge solstice celebration where you actually could pay an admission and then get in for the solstice party. And one of our friends actually did that. It looked incredible, you know, and he talked about his experience of, like, hugging the stones and feeling one with the mother. And, you know, ours wasn't quite that because there's so many people around. And, you know, there were moments where I really felt this, like, palpable, tangible energy. You know, there is definitely something happening there. Although, it's quite diminished because it's so touristy and there's so many people around.
Yeah, and when you're, like, standing on the boardwalk behind the ropes... You know,
yeah, it's not quite as...
Dodging the, you know, Chinese family selfie sticks or something.
Right.
So, that was cool, though. You know, we left feeling okay. And then there was a moment where I really wanted to get a little aerial shot. I wanted to see some, like, landscape. I wanted to see how Stonehenge fit with the landscape. I wanted to see the whole setup from above. And so I had my drone with me, little small backpack drone. And, you know, I took a moment. I got the thing out of the case and just even started, and this woman security guard swooped in on me and, sir, those aren't allowed here. So I was just like, okay, all right. and packed it back up and put it in my bag. And she walked away almost, like, dancing giddily. Like, see, sometimes I get to deal with nice people. She was just so happy that I didn't, like, yell in her face or something. But I was a little bit bummed. I was like, oh, man, I, you know, really wanted that aerial shot. I just wanted to see it from above. And so we headed on. And kind of, I looked for a place to be for the night, like an RV park that would host us. And no one had any availability. I called around a few places. No one had any spots for us. And then I remembered that while we were out there at the stones, I saw this road. There was a dirt road that had a bunch of other RVs and camper vans and interesting things out there. And I was like, And so with the help of Google Maps satellite view, I was able to figure out roughly where that would be and get myself there. So we got out to this road, and it was really cool. It was an unnamed dirt road out in a sheep field. And it was lined with a bunch of other vehicles, right? And so we parked. And,
yeah, other motorhomes and vans and stuff.
Yeah, a couple tents even. And I had kind of thought that maybe they were stragglers from the Solstice Fest. I thought maybe they were just still kind of there, like, partying and hungover, you know? But we went out there and, like, made ourselves at home way in the back of the line, like, away from everybody else a little bit, giving everyone space. And it was amazing. We slept within view of the stones. We could see it out the window of the RV.
Yeah, woke up to that in the morning even. I mean, it was so beautiful.
It was so cool. And then we, you know, there's a little TV in the vehicle too, which is fun for us because we don't own a TV. And so we just tuned into watching, like, the Glastonbury Festival on BBC.
Which is a huge festival. It's like Woodstock happening, like, the next town over.
Right. And so meanwhile, we're watching this, like, cool British music festival in our RV, sleeping at Stonehenge.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And so then, I was like, okay, it was after hours, because you could tell that no tourists were out. They had closed the last tour. The last tour was at 8 o'clock at night. And so, I'm like, okay, maybe I can get that drone footage now. So, I grabbed my gear, and I just started hiking down the road a little bit, closer to the stones. And then I realized that all the vehicles I was passing, they weren't just tourists. They are an organized group of peaceful protesters with the movement Free Stonehenge. Their whole mission is to keep Stonehenge free for everybody. Because right now, we had to pay about, for the whole family, we paid like £50. So we paid like about $60 to get the whole family out there to see the stones and go to the museum. And this group, Free Stonehenge, what they really want to see happen is that, you know, they charge money for the museum. You want to go pay to the museum, the exhibits, that's great. And maybe the tour bus to take you out there, that's great. But if you want to walk yourself out there, you have the right to walk out and be at the stones and see them in person. And right now you can't do that. You have to pay admission because they've roped it off and cordoned it off and fenced it off. And, like, you have to pay admission to go in.
Which is weird, because it's a World Heritage Site, so really everyone in the world ought to be able to go view this.
It's like the history of our species, really. It was an ancient sacred site.
And I even understand, you know, keeping it kind of partitioned off, you know, because of, like, heavy traffic, like, you know, that makes sense. But, like, you should at least be able to go view them with no charge.
Yeah. And, you know, I do understand, like, what you're saying, Rachel. If it's completely unroped off, yes, it would be awesome to be able to get in there and be with that, but just from walking a trail a couple times, you tromp the grass down and you run ruts in the ground and paths and, you know, people have really damaged the stones over the years in significant ways.
Yeah, people did graffiti on them and people would leave garbage and people would stand on them. So, I mean, I get it. Like, keep it, you know, and sure, even if there's an event happening there, like, definitely charge for that, you know, the solstice things or whatever, but just to go look at them, like, That should be free.
Yeah. So this group, Free Stonehenge, had a pretty crazy setup because they weren't like in these new rental RVs like we are in. They were in all kinds of conversion vans and different caravans. And I snapped a photo of an anarchy flag flying. And underneath the anarchy flag is like a little kid's pink bicycle. And then Stonehenge is in the distance.
Right. So it's like whole families of peaceful protesters that are, you know, hanging out there and making a change.
It was pretty cool. So we unwittingly kind of joined the protest And it was just epic. It felt really great because then we get to wake up, and then in the morning I wake up and I look out, and it's again Stonehenge that you can see on the hill from our RV is swarmed with people, like right. covered with people.
But you know, I have to say it was the best night's sleep I've had so far. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you too.
Yeah.
And just really magical waking up with that, and they're like looking out the window and seeing all these sheep and stones. I mean, it was so cool.
It was really cool. Really magical.
And yeah, then we got on the road and we went to...
Well, we started to head towards Bath.
Yes. Which my sister had been here a few years ago and said she really loved Bath. And
On the way, we were following the sat-nav, the satellite nav system. And it gave us a turn down this road in a little village, and I turned onto it and realized pretty quickly, I was like, I don't know why it's leading us this way. It feels rather, like, not like a thoroughfare. It feels kind of small. But I kept going and I kept going.
Well, and already the roads here are quite narrow and windy. And even on kind of the main roads feel like, oh, am I going the right way?
Yeah. And, you know, the RVs have these big mirrors sticking out and everything. And I'm not fully used to the size yet. So I'm just going along up this road, and really not that fast. Maybe like 15 miles an hour I'm going up this little hill. And I'm looking at my side, which is on the right side of the vehicle, and kind of like, you know, watching out for the bushes and the trees and all these other things. And next thing you know, boom! This loud noise.
I screamed.
Yeah. And my passenger side, so the left side vehicle... mirror.
My side, right next to me.
Smacked like a little landscape stone of somebody's yard. Little wall.
Yeah, it was a sweet stone wall.
And the mirror exploded.
Yeah, and flew into pieces on the road.
And then the bottom, like, blind spot mirror just hung dangling by some wires, swinging. All cracked up. So, luckily we handled that one pretty cool all in all.
And the cool thing is that we just happened to have made a purchase of some wonderful tape.
Because the canning jars that Rachel picked up had holes in the
lids. For the drinking straw. They were so cheap, I was like, you know what, we're not going to be here that long, I'm just going to tape them. I'm just going to tape the holes. So we had tape, and so we were like, well, let's just tape this mirror back on.
And it happened to be clear, like packing tape, like clear tape. So we repaired the mirror, taped it back on. And that's kind of funny. And eventually, you know, a lovely woman came out and said, oh, yeah, this happens all the time. You know, people follow their GPS down this road, and it appears that the GPS believes that it's a way you can go through, but it doesn't actually connect through. So it looks like it goes through, but it doesn't go through. And she's like, yeah, people come up here with caravans and trailers. A horrible idea. Horrible. So go up to the top and turn around. And we did. We went up there, turned around, came back.
Yeah, one exploded mirror later, we made our way back out to the main road. And on our way to Bath.
Yeah. And we arrived there. It is really a lovely city. Oh my gosh.
Oh, when we were coming down the hill and we saw this vast, sweeping view.
Oh, yes.
Merritt's making fun of me now.
There was one spot that Rachel and I both, we went, whoa! It was so cool. Very different. It looks, you know, a little bit kind of like Prague-ish, but Rachel says it kind of looks like Paris, you know?
Yeah, it's these like sort of Italian Parisian buildings, you know, where they're all connected together. And it's all really monochromatic. Everything in all the buildings are the same color. They're like this really lovely...
Almost the whole city is like cream color.
Cream, yeah.
Like everything.
Everything is.
Yeah. And then, the roofs are all pretty much the same. And where some cities, it's like such a hodgepodge cobbled together. Like this one, it all looks pretty much the same, but in a beautiful way.
Right. It's really, really relaxing to the eye. It doesn't feel like stark or boring.
No, not at all. You know, and I really love color, but this by no means was lacking anything.
No.
It was really lovely. And, we just kind of navigated into the center of the town, landed at this place called Queen Square.
Well, and half the time when we're driving down some of these roads, I feel like we're on Mickey Mouse's, like, what is that? The cartoon of Mickey Mouse when he's in the camper van and, like, Donald's trying to eat, you know, corn on the cob, and they're, like, flying about, and anyway.
It's like Steamboat Willie up in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, right.
So we got to Queen Square, and there happened to be a little artisan sale, like an artisan fair going on.
Yeah, farmer's market.
So that was pretty cool. We went out and checked that out, and I flew the drone a bit, got a couple shots of the city that look awesome, and got some pakoras. There was a veggie or a Indian food vendor there. It's called India in a Jar.
Oh, man, he was so cool.
And he was so cool. So I got some veggie pakoras from him and some beautiful sauce. He was a riot. I don't think I can even describe how funny
he was. We went and checked out this crystal museum. We made our way to the Roman baths, which is what this whole city was even founded on. The Romans came over, you know, sometime around the time of Jesus and started just, like, setting up camp there.
It was the one hot spring in all of the UK.
Yes, and so they built these... this amazing temple and a beautiful bathhouse right there, where they did ceremony and sacrifice, and then also did all of their amazing Roman self-care practices. So, like, dry sauna, steam sauna, you know, jacuzzi, you know, hydrotherapy, hot and cold, lots of massages, skin scraping, kind of like the, how the, you know, the Asian gua sha, they would do the skin scraping thing. Man, sounded like a place that I would want to hang out. You know, initially the men and women bathed together, and then, you know, probably a few hundred years later, they got a little, you know, more prudish or whatever, and someone declared that then the men and the women had to bathe separately, so they created, like, the East Wing and the West Wing, where the women and the men could bathe separately. Then people flocked there in droves. It was just like this traveling mecca for, you know, people coming to worship and to bathe. That then they said that the women could bathe there in the morning and the men would bathe there in the evening. So, I mean, it was just really cool. We got to see old artifacts of money, like coins and the...
Tools.
Tools. And what are those tablets? The,
Oh, there were curse tablets.
Curse tablets. Yeah, curses.
There were these little thin pieces of lead that people would hire other people to write curses into them against anybody that perceived that did them wrong.
The reason they hired somebody else was because that person knew the proper languaging to speak to God, to the gods in.
Yeah, it was very formal. There's a very formal structure to the way these were written.
And the common theme, though, is that these curses were quite petty.
It was like, someone stole my sandals. They are eternally cursed to damnation because they stole my sandals.
And it could be this person, or this person that did it.
And so I call upon the gods and the goddesses to make their life awful until they return my sandals.
I mean, it was usually for little petty theft. Yeah, that
like
was...
Like a robe.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, they stole my bathing suit. Mwah. I'm going to write this thing in metal, and then they would throw it into the pond, into, like, the wishing well kind of thing at the goddess's feet.
Right. So the goddess would smite them for doing them wrong.
Which, the cool thing about this is that then they were able to get documented written language from forever ago. Like, these are some of the oldest written accounts that they have. You know, they would do these curses things all over the world. Because it's on metal... preserved underwater, it just, like, they have written language from a long time ago.
And the wild thing, it was like handwriting, not like chiseled into stone tablets, you know, or like painted with a brush.
Right.
It was actual handwriting because they would just scratch it into lead with like a thin bone or something, you know.
Right.
Really cool.
Super cool. We learned a lot there. And it's a massive structure. And the crazy thing is that then they just kept building the city on top of it. And so it was kind of undercover and forgotten and lost for a period of time, which happens with a lot of cities where they just build on top of it.
So that was pretty sweet. It was amazing. So much history. We went back, hopped in the RV, and headed on our way. And we had this destination that we'd been told by our first hosts that was supposed to be really beautiful, and it's like the most quaintest, most picturesque little village in all of England.
Quintessential Britain.
Yeah. And it's, like, it's supposed to be just this, you know, time capsule little village.
Yeah, it's already getting kind of late in the day, and we'd done a lot, and...
And I set up a spot for us to park the RV. I set up an RV camp in Wales, where our next destination is, got it all set up already, and there she has a cutoff that she doesn't want to let us in past 8 o'clock.
Well, it was seven and o'clock. You sweet talked her into 8 o'clock.
I sweet talked this Welsh lady into 8 o'clock to squeeze us in because she doesn't want to disturb the neighbors after that.
And see, we had a bit of a miscommunication because I thought that we weren't going to be arriving in Wales until maybe the evening of the 26th. And I think that what had been written, you know, previously by the help of our hosts and Daniel, and I, of course, okayed it, was that we would be getting to Wales the evening of the 25th so that we could wake up and be there in the 26th. So, anyway, I started to feel like, oh my gosh, our England time is dwindling and we haven't really seen a ton, right? Because we spent 2 days kind of maxing and relaxing with our friends. And then we went to Stonehenge, which was, of course, monopolized the day, rightly so. And then I'm like, well, we're not really going to be able to see the south of England very much. And so I really wanted to see this one spot.
It's called Castle Coombe.
Castle Coombe, and it was highly recommended. And, you know, now here we have this time deadline to get there, so to get to our RV site. So So we kind of hemmed and hawed and went back and forth, and it was like, are we going to do it? Are we not going to do it? Are we going to do it? And tension started to run high.
And I tried to do it, and then, yeah, like, the way that the GPS was taking me looked like another possible
skinny
mirror
road.
Disaster.
Oh, man. And so we were like, fine, fuck it. We got to just turn back around. and then that's a whole thing of, like, having to put the vehicle in reverse. I think I got in and out of that.
A dozen times,
just because we'd turn somewhere and then we had to back up and then we had to pull and back. And, you know, it was like a 10-point turn. No, not that bad, but.
And the rental place really stressed us, too. They're like, make sure you have somebody get out and look, because if you back into anything, it is not covered.
Right, which maybe our mirror's covered. I don't know. That could be a spending mistake. So, anyway, so I was getting in and out of the vehicle a bunch. We're like, you know, we're running behind schedule to get to the RV place. And so we just said, fine.
And Rachel's like, fine, we're not going to go. And then I'm like, no, we are going to go.
I'll just give up on my dreams.
I'm like, no, I'm going to make your dreams happen.
But then we're both pissed about the dream happening. So we finally get there, and the one GPS keeps talking to us and it's programmed for Wales. And then I have...
Because that address is impossible to type in, mind you.
Right.
Like, the Welsh address is crazy.
And I have the other GPS that's programmed to go to Castle Coombe, and... Anyway, they're both talking over each other, and you all know how annoying that can be. It's just like, ah, stop talking. So, anyway, then we make a few other wrong turns, and I'm like, why are we following the fucking one to Wales? And then we get to the Castle Coombe, and I get out, and I take, like, 4 photos, some of which don't even turn out, and basically it's just like this whirlwind of, like, cool, I saw it. Meanwhile, Daniel's in the car saying, fuck this place. And Castle Coombe is probably the most charming, most amazing spot in England that we've seen so far.
It really is a time capsule.
And nothing has changed since, like...
I don't know.
Since it was built. And they filmed the original Dr. Dolittle there. And, like, I wanted to live inside that movie when I was a kid. And so I just wanted to be there. I'm really glad that I got to see it. I am sad that I didn't get to be there longer. I'm really glad we're past all of that because it was hilarious and challenging and a lot of F words. And
yeah,
the
Daddy.
Kids, I think, were just probably hiding in the back.
But we made it. We made it through. And we crossed the border into Wales.
Yeah.
The signs got crazier because Welsh is a very interesting language.
It may be a tie for craziest language between Iceland and Wales.
Yeah. Yeah. Only visually, Welsh is even crazier to me. Because
right.
It puts consonants together that don't seem like they should go. And there are words that... Like, I could kind of try to pronounce some Icelandic words and, you know, not know that I didn't have the right inflection. I look at Welsh words and I'm like, I don't even know how to say this word.
Their U's are W's. So, like, tunnel is T-W.
N-L.
N-L. Twunnel.
Anyway, we made it to Wales. It was great. We pulled into our RV site. Everything's wonderful.
At exactly 8 o'clock on the dot. So we walk in and we're like laughing with the lady that Daniel and Sweet talked, and she's like, "Oh, right on time." And then she's giving us all the things. Here's some candy. Here's some brochures. Here's a map.
Here's some buttons. Here's a magnet with a dragon on it.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, and turns out they have everything that we need. We didn't even know. I was like, why are we rushing to get to this place that just has power? Like, we don't even know if they're going to have services. We don't even know if they're going to have Wi-Fi. I mean, if they don't even have any of that stuff, we should just stay on the side of the road.
They had everything you said they wouldn't have.
They had everything that we didn't know that they would have. And so all of our dreams came true. Here we are. We've been having a blast watching more of Glastonbury Fest.
Yep. And tomorrow we're going to meet up with Wales' strongest man, who happens to be vegan and animal rights activist. And he's going to give us all a personal strength training session.
This should be good.
It should be real good. And then we're going to continue our adventure. So that's going to be great. We're going to interview him. His name is
Bob.
It's not Bob.
Joe.
His name is Jamie Lee Redwood. And he's
this is so close.
And he's the strongest man in Wales. So.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
So all in all, we've been having a blast. Merritt is able to talk in this really cool voice that she's been trying to teach us all how to do. It's like this interesting throat talking. Well, actually, she does a few voices. Maybe she'll be so kind as to share them with our listeners.
Maybe.
Cool.
We can probably stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Thank you for joining. Thank you for joining our journey, everybody. Stay tuned for more. We love you. No, I'm gonna make your dreams happen.